Blog Talk Radio.
It's Smoke Signals, brought to you by IndiansBaseballInsider.com and hosted by Tony LaStoria and Jeff Ellis. They're talking Tribe.
Good evening, Tribe fans, Cavalier fans, and Draft fans. This is Tony LaStoria along with Jeff Ellis. Busy day today at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. Not only are the Indians playing a game tonight, falling, they're a little bit behind 3-1 here, but there was a big basketball game going on right across the way at the queue. Cavaliers playing game three. But we're here to talk some draft tonight. I know for those that want to chime in here live and then also some that are going to listen to this on the podcast later on, they download it. Indians have been busy last night and today. They made 11 picks, a pretty good mixture of players seen prep and college and, middle infielders, the typical middle of the diamond kind of guys where they don't really draft any corner guys in the first the bonus pool rounds, kind of holding serve, so to speak, with the philosophies of the past. But we're going to kind of break down some of the things we've seen so far. I'm going to kind of rely on Jeff for a lot of information. I'm just going to kind of just ask a bunch of questions, and we're going to get right into this thing. But Jeff, how are things going? You've been a very busy man over the past 24 hours. Are you still surviving, or what's going on?
It's been interesting. I mean, I've shared both the articles I wrote for Scout, but the draft went until past midnight, and I was so busy giving analysis during the draft that I couldn't really start my articles until the draft was done. And yep. I wanted to, if you looked at some of the national guys today, they covered like 6 or 8 teams and did a few words. I covered every single pick in depth and ended up with nearly a 6,000 word article. So between that and then writing a best available, I didn't get in bed till about 5 in the morning and then had an alarm to be up by 11 so I could then get things together for today. So, I mean, I still got about 6 hours, but it's
The advantage of being a school teacher, right?
I don't know if I've ever typed so much. Yeah.
You probably couldn't imagine
it. Today
it
was not.
A good job. Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
there were definitely points today where I was just, I don't think I was even typing in English anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on. It's crazy. Obviously, it's easy at first round and the supplemental period yesterday when it's 5 minutes between picks. But, yeah, social media can be a detriment at times because you get so caught up in posting things and responding to people and this and that also you're like, hey, oops, I have to write a piece. So, yeah, it's funny how that works. All right, hey, let's kind of jump into things here. Obviously this is an Indians site, Indians show, so we're going to just concentrate, most of our efforts on what the Indians have done so far. So based on the first 11 picks, I mean, we'll go a little more in depth on some of these guys. And we're also scheduled to have Juan Hillman on around 10 o'clock, too. We're going to talk to him a little bit. But in advance of all that, what's your general feel of this draft so far for the Indians? How do you think they're doing?
Brady Aiken was mind-blowing. I mean, it was one of those picks where I'm like, wow, we're going to do it. I mean, he's a 6'4 kid who's hit 98, who looks like three. I mean, last year he was Kershaw Light. That was the exact comp that I put on him. We don't know how healthy he is. We don't know about anything else. But, that just kind of started everything off with, kind of holy crap moment. And, I all day people were asking me about him because people always ask about the big names. And I was shooting it down. And then about 4 o'clock, someone said, you might not want to shoot that down anymore. And I'm like, what's that supposed to be? And they go, and it was just one of those things where, I submitted my mock Saturday, And I'm not going to go around and change it because, especially the day of the draft, I get so much bad information. So I wasn't exactly sure even if I could trust this or not. But I ended up being really good information. And I was telling people before the draft, I'm like, there's an outside chance from what I'm being told. But that set a tone. I mean, those top three picks are kind of interesting because they're all pitchability guys, which is what the Indians go for. But, I mean, they're also huge risks, which is not what the Indians have done. You know, McKenzie's wasn't in my top 75 because he looks, you know, the whole joke on draft night was he looked like one of the skeletons from that old Jason and the Argonaut movie. He's got to get bigger. He doesn't really have any current above average, you know, he's about as far away as you can get. And, you know, Hillman's probably the safest guy they drafted in that first round and the first day because Aiken's medicals and McKenzie just being kind of a raw slate, but that was interesting. And then just coming into today, they had a clear type of player they wanted. And that guy, there's a lot of interesting things coming out about minor league scouting and the most effective stats to use. And one of the big, you know, there's age relative to level. Because if a guy has a high BAPIP in the minors and in college, the thought process is that shows they're making a lot of contact, which is what you want to see when they're facing lesser competition. And then K rate, which also shows that high, if it's a low K rate, it shows that they have a high, you know, they're putting the ball in play. It kind of shows strength versus level. And the Indians went crazy on those three things. Wyatt Jones, the one pitcher they took, was like the fifth youngest pitcher in the draft. Him and McKenzie are both still 17.
Yeah.
Hillman just turned 18.
For a while.
All young guys. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
months.
Jones won't be 18 until September.
Yeah, I know.
September. And if you look at Krieger, Tom, Mateus, Lukes, if you look at every single bat they took, they are all high BAPIP, low K-rate guys. These are guys who don't strike out much. They put the ball in play. And they were clear. I mean, I like Krieger. If he had been healthy, I think he's long gone. And Mateus, I mean, it was really, those picks were just so interesting to me because it's a pair of shortstops, both coming off labrum injuries that required surgery, who both had to play DH this year because of that. And were both kind of, you know, probably would have gone around maybe round and a half higher if they had been healthy. But they're in many respects carbon copies, 55 hit tools, not much power, average running. And then right after that, they took Kahai Tom, who is just like that, but he's an outfielder in the SEC. So, you know, he was doing it against the best of the best, which made him a little more interesting as well, even though he wasn't as highly scouted. It was just, for me, from that perspective, it was they knew exactly what they wanted. And they went for young, high upside arms for four picks. They went with bats with high bat pips and low K rates for four picks. And then they took two senior sign relievers. And then the last guy is Justin Garza, who they tried to get out of high school, who's an undersized right-hander who throws hard but just had Tommy John surgery. So, you know, I don't think I've ever seen them quite as concentrated as they have been.
Yeah, definitely. You can see the philosophy really starting to kind of find its way now. I know last year they really kind of altered things a little bit last year. You know, we talked about before where they really went for those now kind of prep guys. You know, in the past they go after those Trey Haley kind of guys with the raw power and, you know, just very, very lots of upside, but man, you could really miss on those kind of guys because they didn't have the delivery, the command, all that stuff. Whereas now they're going for those Justice Sheffield, Grant Hocken types, and now this year it's the McKenzies and the Hillmans, and even, yeah, I know he's not a prep guy, but you might as well consider him, you know, Aiken, for lack of a better term, is a prep guy still. So you see them really kind of the focus with the prep arms. And then also it's that middle of the diamond thing. I mean, I think, what was it? Last year was the first time, I think, in the last 5 or 6 years that they took like a corner guy. The name escapes me who it was. But
they took Pappy and Bradley last year.
Yeah.
And before that, the only other guy they had taken in the last 5 years. No,
it was Jordan Smith.
It was Jordan Smith. So they were like 39 of 40, essentially, or something about that. And then they took two last year. And while Bradley has worked out, I mean, Mike Pappy has been kind of a disaster, which still shocks me, but I mean, there's no other way around it at this point. So it's almost like, and the other thing with them is, you know, 5 out of the last 6 years, they've drafted a player from Virginia. And with Pappy kind of last year being the guy and him disappointing as much as he had, it's like, it's almost like they decided we're not going to take any Virginia guys this year. And we're not going to take, we're not going to take any corner guys. It seems their new favorite school is Vanderbilt, because the second year in a row they've kind of stolen a talent from Vanderbilt, which I was something I think even on this podcast I recommended teams do, is just go after all the Vanderbilt recruits.
They definitely have, you know, that system set in place where what they want to do now, and you know, it's kind of good. At least they seem like they have a plan. You know, how many years did we look at the drafts and go, what are they doing? You know, I mean, you know, Bo Mills and Trevor Crowe and those kind of guys. And then just all around the board with the pitchers they would take and all that stuff. So it looks like now at least they kind of have a system in place, and they're kind of looking for specific things. You know, you and I have talked about before, you know, it's the now stuff, you know, ability to throw breaking stuff already, you know, command the fastball, good delivery, good clean arm action, all those kind of things. You know, guys that potentially are you know, high school guys coming out this year, but that can go to full season leagues next year, you know, that kind of thing. So that's kind of exciting with those kind of guys they got last night. And, you know, we could talk in more detail about those guys individually. But then, like, today, it was an interesting day. And we kind of talked a little bit about off the air coming on. It was a lot of under-slot guys, guys that they probably they're going to have to save some money on, because they're going to spend probably over-slot on most of those guys they got yesterday. I mean, even maybe potentially Aiken. I mean, I'm sure he's not going to come cheap. You know, even though you know he's coming off Tommy John and all that stuff that happened last year. So, you know, there's definitely some interesting guys that they took today. And, you know, the Garza one's kind of interesting to me, because I know he's a guy I really wanted a couple years ago when they got him. And I know that's a guy that I'll have to dig through talking to Mirabelli or Garza after the draft. I can swear that that's a guy that they were on record as quoted as saying that they really pushed hard to go get him, and they just missed on him. So, you know, I'll have to dig through that. Maybe I can dig through a little bit of that when we're talking.
I pulled out my
old
scouting report from 2012 and posted that today. Before I wrote the new report, I just pulled that one up and posted it. It's kind of a fun, like, look at. It's the first time I've rewritten a scouting report since Cody Allen. I will say that. It's the first time I've had to do that. So that's at least a good sign.
Wow. Because it seemed like for a while there, I mean, who is the guy that, Birch Smith, that's right. They drafted him like two straight years. We all thought there may have been a third year they're going to get him. But, yeah, for a while there, they had that one guy or one or two guys every year that they would redraft. And I think the last year or two they hadn't done that, obviously. So anyway, let's kind of get into the meat and guts of this whole thing. Okay, what do you think about the whole Brady Aiken thing? I mean, are you excited about this? Did you see it? I mean, obviously you talked a little bit about it already. But what do we have here with this guy?
If he was healthy, he's the clear number one pick in this draft, and I don't think that's any debate. Last year he was the number one pick in a much better draft. I think at least Rondone would have gone number one this year. I think you would have had, I think Nick Gordon might have gone higher than Rodgers, who went three. I mean, it was much, you know, Kolick was a big right-hander. Not a lot of current stuff, but he's one of those guys that scouts love, because he's just, you know, a 6'5" righty who hits triple digits, even if he doesn't have a secondary pitch at all. But, you know, Aiken went number one because he was an above average. Everything was plus. You know, three plus pitches from the left side, plus athlete, plus command. You look at that; that's an all-star. You know, that's the number one or number two best left-handed pitching prospect in baseball. The only other guy you can compare him against is probably Julio Urias with the Dodgers, who's like 20 and in Double A. That's what it comes down to. And I'm sure if the Indians drafted him, they're one of the teams that saw the medicals. They had a lot of luck with someone like Danny Salazar, who had a lot of health trouble. Carlos Carrasco had Tommy John surgery, and Carlos Carrasco, the doctor who performed his Tommy John surgery, is actually the same one that performed Brady Aiken's Tommy John surgery, so they know the doctor well. So I'm sure that helped. So I'm going to trust the Indians. They are not a team that takes massive risks anymore. You know, he doesn't really have much of a choice. To many people, that was kind of surprising. He went that high. So I think he will go for slot. I'd be surprised if he would expect to get any more than that. Mm-hmm. So I think he gets probably the full slot value. But I'm going to trust in the Indians. Like I said, they know the doctor who did the surgery. They know the medicals. And they're not a team that rolls the dice, like, heavily. I mean, as you said, all the guys they have, none of them are, like, the high-velocity, nothing-else type of arms. They're taking guys who have clean deliveries, and all of them are actually mid to low velocity. So it's the best way I can put it is I had Aiken at 26, and I put him there the whole process because that's the last pick in the first round, and he's such a good talent, I couldn't drop him any lower. You know, this wasn't a Michael Mattiuella situation where I had him in the 40s because there was too much. It's I didn't even know what to know with Nate, with Aiken. And, I mean, Bradley Zimmer's put an absolute clinic up this year, but a healthy Aiken is the number two prospect in this system. So that's what's exciting is, I mean, Zimmer's looked so good, but he might actually drop if you trust in Aiken. And I trust the Indians when it comes to medicals. I think ever since the Jason Knapp situation, they are really on the ball about checking and understanding medicals. They got burned so bad there that since then they've been, you know, Kieran Lovegrove, who's had problems, went online on Twitter after the Aiken pick, and I think he tweeted at Aiken, this is the organization you want to be in if you've had an arm problem.
Yeah, you know, yeah, this could make for interesting debate in the offseason if Lindor does get to Cleveland and loses his prospect value, who the number one prospect is, but that's a debate for another day. I'm all in on the Aiken pick. I mean, I made a ton of points on it this morning in my recap piece, but I think that and there's one play I wanted to kind of get out, and I definitely believe the Indians did their due diligence with the medicals. You know, for what they saw, and you know they're not going to give away what they saw or talk about that stuff, but it seems like they're confident knowing all that information. They pieced it all together well. And I'm sure he's going to go. I'm sure that when he does sign, he's going to sign. I mean, they didn't take him not knowing that he's going to sign. I'm sure they've already had a discussion with him prior to the pick, like, hey, you're going to take this, blah blah blah, all that fun stuff. And I mean, he's pretty much, you know, they got a verbal. Now, I think that, obviously, he's going to go through a pretty extensive physical. So, you know, they're going to get a chance to get a look at him in that way, too, you know, do their own stuff. So I think that's one thing I think a lot of people forget about, too. You know, you wish you could have done that before they picked him, but I think they're pretty confident in those things. Now, I will say this thing. I think there's one caveat with all this. I think I saw some people really taking this to an extreme last night, saying that, you know, because the Indians had this great rehab, blah, blah, blah. It's important to note that the major league rehab group is completely different than the minor league. You know, they kind of work through the same system, but the Indians have a different set of, you know, it's not the minor league guys aren't technically working with the major league training staff. So I think that's an important distinction to make. Now, they all are working under the same guidelines and within the same, you know, doctors and, you know, coordinators and those kind of things, but there is a, you know, pretty discernible difference between the two, you know, as far as care and that kind of stuff goes, because it is a lot different what they're getting. It's a lot more at the big league level than you get the minor league level. So, with that said, though, I mean, this is a guy that you got to take that risk. I mean, look, any pick you take, obviously, in a draft is a risk. I mean, look how many first-round picks just that are healthy that go out and bomb and don't amount to anything. I mean, look at the washout rate and failure rate of any draft pick. You know, 10-15% of any draft pick or whatever it is make the majors or whatever. I forget the number. It changes, but it's a very low percentage. So any pick you make is a risk. Obviously, the first-round pick is the highest success rate. But even those fail at a pretty high amount. So, you know, I know he's coming in with, you know, as, you know, quote unquote damaged goods, but this is a guy I think that he's already got his Tommy John now out of the way. He's, you know, if the medicals are good and his rehab's going well, this is a guy that's on the way back to being what he is. And all they're going to lose is a half year out of him, which will be this year. So, you know, next year he'll probably be in some kind of restricted pitching, you know, regimen, that kind of thing. And maybe he opens an extended spring next year and then joins, you know, Lake County or Mahoning Valley in the middle of the season and then goes from there. Next year will just be a year that they don't push him, but they, you know, get him out there at some point. But this is a guy that they're not losing a lot of time with him. It's not like he got drafted last year and then blew out his elbow, and now he loses like a year and a half in the organization because he's rehabbing. So that's an important thing there. But I think it's a risk worth taking because, I mean, if this guy, you know, if the elbow or whatever is a problem going forward, then you know what? You struck out. But you know what? If this guy is healthy, it's a home run and potentially a grand slam because of what he can be. I mean, this guy is potentially a frontline starter in the big leagues for a long time. He's that quote-unquote, he's that kind of guy that teams look for when they want those ace kind of pitchers because of all the different intangibles and the stuff and makeup and work ethic, all those things. So I'm all on board in this pick, and I think it's the right risk to take, and I'm pretty confident that they felt very good about the information they have on him. And, you know, time will tell. I mean, you can't control injuries, and we'll see how it goes. So definitely a risk worth taking. Is there anything else you wanted to share on Aiken before we kind of jump ahead to a couple of these other guys?
You know, it's just if you ever get a chance, MLB does a lot of stuff in depth. Go look at how weak left-handed pitchers in the minors are. There's not a lot of can't-miss guys.
Yep.
And just understand the value that just him being left-handed adds. Just to state that. Should we jump to Juan Hillman next since he's going to be on in 8 minutes, or do you want to hit McKenzie real quick and then go to
Let's hit McKenzie, and we probably can jump into Hillman, and by the time we're done with him or while we're talking about him, maybe he should be right in line to call. So, yeah, let's go into McKenzie. Now, I was reading, I read your recap capsule you put last night. Now, this was a pick you were kind of iffy about. Yeah, maybe you would have liked to swap the two. Obviously, it worked out in the end. But what are your thoughts on the McKenzie? I mean, obviously, he's a young guy, tall, thin. This guy's like, he kind of reminds me of a Latin American pitcher. I mean, you know, those guys that come over at 6'3" and 150, and they're long, wiry, and dang, just their arms hang down to their ankles, that kind of thing. What are your thoughts on this guy? I mean, do you think that there's some upside? Do you think the Indians was in an overdraft? I mean, what do you think here?
Like I did actually write that last night that I go, if they had taken Hillman at the end of the
fine,
first round and McKenzie where they were, I would have been like 100% fine. When I do my shadow draft, I probably won't take Tristan McKenzie. I get why the Indians like him. You know, he's 6'5", 160, and he's hitting 92. There's almost a 0% chance that when he gets bigger, he's not going to add some velocity. I mean, he needs to add, at 6'5", I mean, you almost want him to add 50 to 60 pounds. Like, that's not an over-exaggeration. Like, you know, Kyle Funkhauser is considered kind of an innings eater, and he's 6'2", 220. This kid's 6'5". So you literally want McKenzie to add about 60 pounds. So, you know, it's kind of a frightening proposition because you don't know how that's going to affect just development or anything else. And you're asking someone to drastically change their body while they're developing as a pitcher. So, I mean, there's no doubt there's upside. He's got front of the rotation upside because he's got nice secondary stuff. He's got good clean. He's got an easy arm action. I shouldn't say clean mechanics. Some people had some issues with his mechanics at points, but, I just worry when it's that much weight because you're asking big changes in a young kid. And we've had high school pitchers that we've taken high who have added 25 to 30 pounds in the offseason. The problem in the past was we didn't want them to. So this is the kid where you'd actually be happy to see him come back 30 pounds heavier next year.
Yeah, they definitely kind of got saying this is an interesting kind of pick with that – that size and the potential to, you know, add 30, 40, maybe even 50, you know, maybe cracks 200 when it's all said and done. You know, maybe not. But, you know, it's a guy that's going to add some weight. Hopefully when he adds some of that weight, it's good weight, and he adds some strength. And, you know, as you said, that could potentially add not only to his velocity, but, you know, more sharpness to his breaking ball. And he just overall pushes his stuff up that one more notch all across the board. And that could be a difference maker for him. So, you know, it's very interesting how they took the three prep arms. I know I keep saying it. You know, I'm including Aiken as a prep arm when I say that. But it's very interesting because they haven't done this, since the 2001 draft, right, when they took Denham and Horn, I think it was, and Dittler, or no. Who's the guy missing in there? There
was that Martin, maybe, that
Martin?
Year? Was that J.D. Martin?
I forget. I know that Dittler was maybe he was the second or the third round pick that year, but same thing, like where they took all those high school pitchers that year, and we all know that was
a lot better.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You know, that was a tragic fail, an epic fail. I think most of those guys didn't get double A, and when they did get double A, they struggled. So hopefully this is a better case, and I think they're more prepared. In this kind of like we said with their philosophy is more. It's a better philosophy now, and I think they're really – it's an organization-wide teamwork where they're all – I mean, it's not just Brad Grant and the scouting staff. It's, you know, it's all the pro scouts coming in. It's all the – it's player development, all the coaches. You know, player development watching video saying – and the scouts coming up to the player development guys going, hey – if we draft this guy, what do you think? And then the player development guy is saying, yeah, we can fix this, or yeah, we can work with this, or yeah, this fits into our philosophy that we're teaching with our pitchers and our hitters. So I think it's a very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a very cohesive setup here where you have the scouting department and player development department working as one, and that's why you're seeing such a unique set of skills that they're looking for with the bats, like you said, the high hit rate, low strikeout rates, the pitchers having the polished delivery. You know, Ruben Niebla, he has his thing he does with the pitchers, and you know they have a certain thing that they're teaching these guys, and you know it obviously helps when you bring guys in that kind of fit that mold. So. Yeah, you know, we'll see how this all shakes out, but you know, you definitely gotta love the McKenzie pick. I mean, it's a guy that there's a lot of potential room for growth, and you know, we'll see where that goes from there. But I wanted to definitely make sure we kind of get into Hellman just a little bit, segue into him before he calls in here, and he should be calling here any minute. But what do you think about the Hellman pick? I mean, this is a guy I think obviously reading your write up, you're a lot more excited about. You would actually love to get him a little bit earlier, and he might even be considered a steal in some ways. So what do you think about that pick?
I mean, I loved it. It was one of those things I didn't even – so much is going on as I'm trying to – basically, I'm giving a scouting report on draft night, and every pick as it's happening, you kind of lose track of guys. I had Hellman going the second pick in the sandwich round to Atlanta at 28. There had been some connections there, and there was a lot of talk. He would be late first, early second. And then when it was announced that the Indians took Juan Hellman in the second round, it was like, first it was, that's really good. And second was, wait, he's still on the board. So, you know, he's a 6'2 lefty who has sat more low 90s with the reports that he had hit 95 a few times. You know, he's got just a natural feel for pitching. You just kind of watch him and you go, that's a pitcher. He could have three above average pitches from the left side. I mean, it's a package you like. It's 6'2", 180. You know, he could add a little weight. He definitely could, but it's not a big deal. He's not a kid who has he just needs to keep going. It's the nice thing with Juan Hellman. He just needs to keep developing. You don't need him to really change anything. He just needs the reps. And I really think, I wrote several times, I thought he was the safest prep arm in the draft. I just think he just needs reps. I don't think he needs a whole lot more than that in coaching. So to get him in the second round, I thought was an absolute steal.
Yeah, maybe it was McKenzie or if it was him. I can't remember. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now. Which one had the five losses in high school last year? Do you remember
looking
at the stats? I'll have to look that up. One of them, I got a tweet from somebody saying, if he's so good, how come he has five losses? I go, well, look at his ERA. He has like a 0.7 ERA. It's because he probably had no run support. You know, no one probably scored any runs. I'll have to dig that one up. I got to find that one. I don't know. Because if it is the case.
I have a hard time finding high school stats. I'm surprised that someone had that to complain about it. But yeah,
we tweeted out Hayden had the stats. I think it was because they were in the well, I actually might have it here in the press release. Hold on a second. No, yeah, he went 10-0. So it must have been McKenzie that went. He went 9-5, like an 0.79 ERA. Somebody's like, well, if he's so good, why do you have five losses? I'm like, well, I go, there's the prime example why wins and losses is the most useless stat for a pitcher. I mean, you know, he came, you know, but anyway. So, but yeah, to kind of add on with what you're saying with the Hillman thing, yeah, you gotta love this thing because. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know a lot about these guys. I have a very general overview about these guys until we get them. Then I really kind of dive in and get to know more about them after that. But, I mean, just looking at the draft boards, I mean, he was high on your draft board. We got him 59th overall, and he was rated higher on boards on every major site. He was 54th in MLB.com, 46th with Kylie McDaniel of Fangraphs. 31st with Keith Law, 50th with Baseball America, and 26th with Perfect Game. So, you know, a lot of people obviously are, it's a consensus thing where they felt this is a guy that, late supplemental comp B kind of pick or whatever you call it. But we got him in the second round. So deep in the second round, you know, middle end. I can't remember what number our pick it is, but it was 17 or whatever. So you definitely got to kind of like that, and you feel like he's got some value there. He seems very like he's healthy, advanced kind of guy. Kind of reminds you a lot of Sheffield with that same lefty. Obviously he's left-handed, but the same kind of stuff. You know, he's not going to blow you away, but you know he has the potential to get that fastball up there, you know, into the low to mid 90s, and maybe potentially get more. But he's got that good feel for pitching. He's not overly big, and the makeup and just a lot of things that you got to like that you can build around, but also that is already established. I mean, he's got that foundation. You know, again, it goes back to like we were talking about before with the philosophy with the pitchers. You know, a lot of times in the past with the Trey Haley's and the Dylan Howard's the Jake Sisko's and all these other kind of guys they got, either as a first-year junior college guy or a prep guy, a lot of these guys didn't have a foundation. They just threw the ball hard, or they had, you know, the height or the size or, you know, the wide shoulders, all these different variables that maybe potentially could make them good, but they didn't have that foundation with the command and established secondary stuff and those kind of things. Whereas with guys like McKenzie and Hillman and last year with Sheffield and Hocken, and and to an extent, a guy like Micah Minyard, Minyard, who still is an interesting guy that we're going to get to hopefully see here in the next couple of weeks when short season league starts. But you're seeing that, philosophy, and you know it's interesting to see this thing play out. We're going to find out if it's the right one or not. Because probably in the next 3-4 years, we're going to get some feedback on this philosophy, if it's working, or if it's going to be tinkered again. They're going to have to look for something else. But it seems like they definitely have a good approach with it, and we'll see. So, with that said, I believe we have Juan on the line. I'm going to see if we can bring him in here. Juan, are you on? Is that you, Juan?
Yes, sir. It's me. I'm sorry for not saying. Hello to you guys.
No problem. Well, hey, first off, welcome to Cleveland. Obviously, things aren't official yet, but we wanted to welcome you. I'm Tony Lestori. I'm the co-founder and site editor for the Indians Baseball Insider, and Jeff does a lot of our draft stuff. He's doing stuff with the scout.com stuff as well this year. So, yeah, definitely welcome aboard, and we're looking forward to watching this year. I guess first question I wanted to throw your way is, How do you feel to be an Indian?
Oh, it feels great. I mean, growing up as a little kid, I was always watching you guys spring training in Winter Haven, Florida. And that's where I grew up in, Winter Haven, Florida, when you guys had spring training a little while ago, Winter Haven, Florida. Thanks to God and watched a few games, especially mainly when you guys played the Braves. I was always watching Jordan Schaefer because I knew his dad growing up. And we used to go out and watch the Braves play you guys in Winter Haven almost all the time in Chandler Lakefield. It was just great to be in the Indians uniform. Mm-hmm. And just ready to get it started.
Yeah.
This is Jeff Alissa. I've been the one talking to you on Twitter. I was kind of curious, I'm always in this process. Did you have an idea with the Indians? Had you known they were coming to check you out? Were they like, how much do you know what's going on behind the scenes at the end of your senior season there?
I spoke with the Indians, I think, once or twice. They came to my house and did a few home visits, I believe. Before the draft, I think I spoke with them like a month ago. And I knew they had interest in me, but I didn't know they had that much interest in me. I guess they were doing behind the scenes work with my advisor, Mr. Gordon, and I never knew, because this whole draft thing, I wasn't trying to get into it. I was just trying to keep my mind off of it, just hanging out with family and being like a normal kid, enjoying the time. So, I mean, I honestly didn't even know they had that much interest in me.
Yeah, you know, you got to go through the draft process, obviously, this year, big year with, pitch for your high school team, that kind of thing. But what was going through your mind last night? Obviously, you had the opportunity to go somewhere as early as late first round, potentially, or somewhere there in the second round, where the Indians end up getting you. What was that like last night, kind of sitting around and waiting? And I guess, how did you find out that you got picked?
My advisor called me and told me, the Indians are about to pick you. They're about to pick you. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was actually at a Gators wing house, wing house down here in Florida. Yeah, I was with my family, and we were all just sitting having a good time. And every time the picks was getting, I say between the 30th and, 60th pick, all my family kept pulling out their phones thinking I'm going to get picked. They kept doing it over and over and over. I was like, just stop doing it right now. And once I found out that I was going to get picked by them, I didn't even tell my family anyone. And they still just put the phone out and it was like, just kept doing it. Even when I told them to stop, they kept on doing it. And, I was the only one who knew I was getting picked, but I didn't tell anyone at all. And once they heard it, it just went crazy in there. Everyone was happy, giving me hugs, very excited. My mom started tearing up. Just a dream come true.
Yeah. Did they have a? Now I'm not familiar with the wing house there. You said the Gator wing house. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Gators outside. It's a good wing house.
Is it a sports bar? Is it a sports bar kind of thing with TVs and stuff?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you should have said, hey, why don't you guys put on the MLB Network and show the draft, right? Or are you probably just wanting to get away from it all?
Yeah, they've kind of set it up because they were pretty familiar with the draft and everything. And they're almost all the workers are baseball fans. So that was like a good thing for me and a good thing for Gators to get that advertisement. So it's kind of win-win situations for both of us.
Yeah.
Now, for those who don't know, you pitched at Olympia, which is a high school known for putting talent in, and you also have a connection to the Gordon family. Now,
yes,
have you had a chance to talk with Nick? If you guys both get to the big leagues, you might have to face each other once you guys both get there often. With him being with the Twins and you now being with the Indians, I'm sure that will lead to some fun conversations.
Yes, during the draft, I was speaking with Nick. Honestly, I was on FaceTime with him before. He was just telling me, remain patient and humble, everything will be all right. And then, whoever you get picked by, me and Nick are very competitive. Even if it's a video game, ping pong, pool, anything, we're always competitive, basketball. He was like, whatever team you go with, you're going to have to face me, no matter what. So be ready to pitch against me. And I was like, I'm not worried about you. So we just had that kind of like brotherly talk. It's just always fun between us. So it was a great feeling. I was honestly blessed to be in this position to be so close with the Guardians. And then being in my position with baseball and the draft and everything, just everything just feels so unreal.
Yeah, you know, there is the potential, obviously. I know he's a year ahead of you or whatever, but, depending on how things shake out with where he goes in the minors and, you know, how quickly you go in the minors, you guys could face off in a minor league somewhere down the road, depending on how things go. I'm sure that'll be some fun when that happens. But how did that all come about with you and the Gordons developing that relationship?
Growing up as a kid, I always knew of Nick and played with him. Then once I got, say, like 10 years old, I was playing on the younger team, and he was on the older team. I was playing with the Chet Lemon Jukes, traveled with me and Nick, started our little bond there, and then we was always close. Then our families got together and was friends, and just always, like, family friends. Just always stayed close. And then once they found out I was moving, once the Gordons found out, I was moving from Haines City High School, which is a high school in Polk County in Haines City, Florida. Found out I was switching schools, and it was like, oh, you can come up to Olympia. This is where Nick goes. And Olympia is an A-plus school in academics, and the baseball team is top five in the nation, which is great, great situation to be in. And we sat down and talked about it. Like, I'd say we probably met up with them like five times at sit-down conversations. They said it would be the best move for me, and pretty much we agreed on it, and it was.
Mm-hmm. Now for the Cleveland Indians fans who are listening who don't know a lot about college or of high school baseball, can you just describe your pitch mix, what type of pitcher you are, so that they can get an idea?
Me personally, I like to throw my fastball. I got a fastball changeup and a curveball. And also have like a slurve curve and then like a 12-6. That like a nasty curveball, as Mr. Gordon would say. I have my fastball range is about 90 to 93. I got up 95 my last high school start. I was 90 to 95 that day. And say my second best pitch would be my curveball, which is a slurve type, but once it's a 0-2 count, well, a pitcher's count, that's when I use my 12-6 curveball to get one in the dirt or that nasty break on it. My third pitch is my circle changeup. And I also have a split changeup. It depends on the count and everything. Do I throw my split changeup or the circle changeup? I throw all of them for strikes. I love those strikes. Pretty much a strike thrower. And model my game after Clayton Kershaw. So been an impact on my baseball career as well as Mr. Gordon and D and Nick. Those are my pitches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like you have a lot of experience with, the off-speed stuff seems like it's pretty advanced for a guy your age. Something the Indians kind of like over the last couple of years. They've kind of targeted those prep kind of guys that have that advanced secondary stuff. But one thing that's kind of interesting is I'd be interested to know is, Tom Gordon had you've probably seen it. He had a nasty curveball when he played in the major leagues. That thing would just drop off a table.
People are running out the box, and the curve still ends up in the strike zone, making people look foolish.
Do you, you say you do the, you kind of change that curveball a little bit when you get the two strikes or whatever, get that 12-6 action. Do you, is it similar to that, or do you have a long way to go over to get to Mr. Gordon's fastball or curveball?
I have a long way to go. Trying to get there. Just working on it.
Has he given you any pointers on that curveball? I mean, how to throw it and that kind of stuff? And movement?
He had me grip it as like a horseshoe shape, kind of like a C shape. And when I finish with the curveball, my thumb should be finishing up. And my two fingers should be on the bottom. It was like, if I had the ball and you guys are here, I can like show you. But I finish with the thumb on top and the two fingers like on the bottom. Oh, that's a few pointers.
Yeah. And Jeff, I mean, real quick, I just want to follow up on it real quick. When did you start throwing your curveball? I mean, obviously, you know, there's all these things, you know, what age kids should start throwing, that kind of stuff. But, like, when did you start really start throwing that thing? At what age?
I'd say when I was about 10, about 9 to 10. I threw a knuckle curve. Well, my coach, I was on Little League. My Little League coach taught me a knuckle curve. And I was just throwing it. I mean, it had a little break, but it wasn't. It was a very hittable break, but I guess at that age, kids wasn't familiar with curveballs yet.
Yeah.
Kind of say that's cheating, but it's the game of baseball. So,
yeah. It's all about getting advantages,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, sir. that's I threw a knuckle curveball at the age of 9, 10, so
okay. That's
when I started.
Now, I have to ask, you know, the Indians are back-to-back with you and Tristan McKenzie, who's also a Florida pitcher. I don't know Florida geography very well, but are you familiar with him? Did you guys ever face each other
sir.
In the show, Cater, in the state?
Yes, sir. I played against him, actually, this summer. Travel team, well, I didn't pitch. I was pitching that game. Yes, sir. I was pitching. I started the first two innings, and he started the first two innings for his team. I played with FTG Chandler. FTG Chandler, I think he was on a team named Assault or something like that. It was down at the Nationals complex. It was a little quick tournament for teams to get on their feet and just get a few more extra baseball playing. We faced off against each other then. I didn't know who he was at the time. Then I saw him again at Perfect Game, All-American game. And I was like, well, you're the same kid I pitched against. So we kind of like got a little bond at the Perfect Game All-American showcase. So we've been kind of testing ever since. And I had to congratulate him last night for being an Indian as well as me and Brady Aiken. Congratulated Brady Aiken. So I've yet to meet him too. But I saw him when I was in Perfect Game, All-American, I was in San Diego. I saw him out at the beach. So I just haven't met him now.
That's crazy.
Quite a group of young arms they're putting there with you guys.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so
get it started. Sorry, you can go.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, so like, what's your what's the next steps here? I mean, obviously you gotta go through the negotiations process. Do you have anything to announce yet? You guys still kind of talking, or are you guys? I mean, what's the next steps for you? I mean, are you close to signing? Or are you guys still talking?
Oh, yes, sir. I'll be signing next Wednesday. This Tuesday, I got to fly out to Cleveland to get my physical and everything done. And then Wednesday is the day I'll sign. So I'll be in Cleveland next Tuesday to Thursday. And I'll go out to a Cleveland game, I think Wednesday night, I believe. Just ready to excited. First time in Cleveland, first time in Ohio.
Oh, wow.
And I know it's a big thing. I know basketball is a big thing for Cleveland right now.
Yeah.
I'm a LeBron fan, so yeah.
Maybe you'll be in town in time for what? See, I'm trying to think of how the schedule. Yeah, Tuesday night I think is game 6 potentially. You could be there for the celebration potentially with the Cavs winning a title. So.
Oh yeah.
Not to get ahead of myself.
I'll celebrate with them. I know I can't get it. I know I can't get into the game. So I'm pretty sure it's sold out. So I'll
should bother the Indians.
Celebrate.
They might be able to get you in.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes, sir.
Did they give you any kind of idea? I mean, what's your plan after you do all that fun stuff next week and get down to business? Are you going to go out to Arizona and just get the work out there?
Yes, I got to start off in Rickey Ball, Arizona. I believe I'll report out there the 19th or 20th.
Okay.
So I'm pretty excited for it, ready to get out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Goodyear's a lot of fun, although yeah, it's an interesting experience. I'm sure you'll learn as you go through the whole process and talk to guys there. It's fun.
Yes, sir.
You know, rookie ball is it's different, obviously, from high school and all that fun stuff.
Yes,
so good luck with that. It'll be a lot of fun for you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Jeff.
I mean, thank you for coming on and giving us the your time. It's a great chance for fans to get to know you, and I can definitely tell you that just from having talked to people on Twitter, people are excited for you as a pick, and once they hear just how much you talk about your pitches, I think they're going to be even more so. It's clear that you are someone who has your mechanics down and know how to play, to go out there and perform.
I wish I can go out and talk to all you guys, all the fans on Twitter, but it's just crazy right now, so I can't. And go out and favorite everything. Let them know. Yeah, I'm watching. I'm liking your comments and stuff. So just can't go out and favorite everything. So I just want to let them know. Thankful to be in India and ready to get after it.
Yeah, we're happy to have you on. And I'm looking forward to meeting you. I'll probably be out there for Instructure League near the end of Instructure League in October. I'm assuming you're going to be there, so I'll get to meet you then, and we'll be able to talk and be a lot of fun there. So good luck in rookie ball this year, and we'll hopefully get to talk to you again soon. I appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, all fans.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Jeff, any kind of quick thoughts on that? Any kind of thing, what'd you like that he said? Was there anything kind of stuck out with you?
I just like how much he knows his pitches. Like, he knows where he uses them. He knows. It's kind of like we've gotten used to with some of these guys they bring in. They're, it's just not somebody who goes up and he's thinking fastball every pitch. As you heard him, it's like he changes his curve based on situation. Or when you asked him about the Tom Gordon curve, and he was talking about the exact placement where things need to go. It's the Indians were able to get Trevor Bauer so cheap because he was a cerebral, intelligent pitcher, and that seemed to scare the Diamondbacks. And just talking to Juan there, it's pretty obvious that this is a smart kid who knows how to pitch, he knows how to go about things, and that I think the Indians are targeting that. I think they're an organization who values intelligence and realizes the importance of intelligent players. I mean, that's not new. This is an organization that went out of their way to add Ivy League kids for a very long time. So, but I thought you could even see that just in our short conversation.
Well, yeah, and I think you can almost, you wonder if the fact that they picked up Bauer, if, some of those weird little things about him and how he is so cerebral, if that kind of opened their eyes, that kind of, ever since then, that they've kind of changed that philosophy a little bit. Get those guys that know about pitching, understand their mechanics, know what they're doing wrong, when it's going wrong and how to fix it, those kind of things. And, when you have a guy like this, obviously he's a high school guy and it's all based on what guys are seeing. It's always beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. But like we were saying earlier, when you got a guy that does consensus top 50 draft prospect, they're getting him, anywhere from 10, 15, 20 slots lower than he was expected to go. You have the potential for a real bargain and a guy that can help them out here. And there's a long way to go here. There's so many things. That's the thing about the minor league. The path, especially for a high school guy, there's so many landmines along the way. Things that can go wrong with injuries and performance and consistency and so many things like that. That you never know what's going to happen. But that's why I think I really like this approach where you do kind of want to protect yourself from those things by getting those guys that have those clean deliveries, are good deliveries, clean arm action, command the baseball, stuff like that, so they can avoid those injuries, can avoid the inconsistency, can perform on a regular basis, can move up at a decent pace. The high school guys, it's usually one stop a year kind of thing. But, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's not only see what Juan does, but also what the other guys, McKenzie and Aiken. Obviously, we won't see him until next year. Maybe I might see a bullpen from him in an instructional league when I get out there. That'd be a treat if that happens. But, these other guys, Garza, Wyatt, the name just escapes me. Jones, what's the name? The other guy today, the 17-year-old?
Yeah, Wyatt Jones.
Yeah, yeah. For some reason I wanted to call his last name Wyatt. But they've got some intriguing arms there that are interesting to see what they do. What was it, seven pitchers? No, six pitchers. They got three in a row. They took three bats, and then they took Garza, and then the two pitchers at the end, the two seniors, right? So,
I think
it's seven pitchers, four.
No, is it seven? Yeah, seven and four.
Yeah, I was thinking ten. I was thinking ten. But I forgot about the Compay pick. That there's 11 picks in 10 rounds. So yeah, they definitely went pitching heavy. I mean, we've got about 4 minutes here, so let's kind of do a synopsis of the bonus pool rounds. I'll probably talk much more about the draft after tonight because it'll be all news by Tuesday. You know, we probably know a couple of things, you know, some of the signings or any kind of developments that came about. But, obviously the 1 through 10 are the meat and potatoes of the draft and are the guys that people ultimately care about because those are the money picks, the bonus pool rounds. You know, there's some guys in the later rounds that do come to the forefront, but it's not like it used to be in the past where you can get those big signability guys in its 20th and 30th round and spend what you want on those guys because your organization has a boatload of cash. So what do you think about those picks, though, that we didn't get into, all these day two picks that the Indians made today?
Well, I mean, just to go through them, like, super quick. Mateus and Krieger are interesting because if you read what I said, they're both coming off labrum surgery. They're very similar hitters. They're low K rate, high contact rates. The best tool is their hit tool. Both were shortstops. They announced Mateus is the second baseman and Krieger is the shortstop because those two are going to go up through the system together. Krieger is the switch hitter. Mateus is your right-handed bat. People should be happy, right? and then with the fifth pick,
he's not a power bat.
he's right-handed. Kahehe Tom, or as he goes by, Blaze Kahehe Tom. So you got to like that name. Very similar to those guys. Like so much so that there was talk that some teams were going to try him at second base. He's an advanced college bat. He put up really big numbers at Kentucky, which is not a strong program, but is in a very strong division. So there wasn't a lot of protection around him, but high contact, could get on base, low strikeouts. Wyatt Jones, super young right-hander with mid-90s velocity. He's kind of the biggest risk of the arms they took. He might require some overslot. We'll have to see. Nathan Lukes was a walk-on at Sacramento State who set their all-time hit record. Again, low K rate, decent arm, decent speed, probably a fourth outfielder. Garza, they were really big into a few years ago, but he's a 5'10 right-hander, which is even shorter than Carson Fulmer. And, you know, there was all those concerns with Fulmer. Garza also, about a month ago, had Tommy John surgery, very recently. So I don't know how much he can demand because he's got no leverage because he'd miss all of next season.
What did they take then? Four or five guys that have shoulder arm issues in the draft? Is that definitely
yeah.
taken? That's interesting. Very interesting.
And then Stewart and Strode, you can group together as a pair of senior signs. Strode is Florida State's closer. Probably more of a loogie long term. I mean, that's just based on these few videos I saw. It looked like he kind of comes out a little when he's throwing, maybe a little bit of side arming to it. So maybe clean that up. But you know, the major the closer at a team that was in the soup made it all the way to the super regionals. And Stewart is a big Canadian kid at a small school who everyone talks about the Cape. Well, if you don't get the Cape, there's an Alaskan summer league as well. And his control was not very good there, but he was getting it up to 95, 96. He's a guy normally in the low 90s. So you take a risk on this 6'2 Canadian kid who's hit 95, 96 coming out of the pen. And I imagine they'll put both those guys in fast-track pen rolls. But outside of Jonas Wyatt. I don't know why I got that name wrong myself. But outside of Wyatt, because, like I said, Garza's got no – he's an undersized right-hander who's going to miss all of his senior year and have to redshirt. So I wouldn't be surprised if Garza went for slot or just a little over slot. They saved a lot of money today. And while I think Aiken's going to go for full slot, and McKenzie and Hillman probably overslot. I'm going to be interested to see if they take an 11.
Yep, you got it. Well, amazing how quick the show goes when you talk a little bit of draft. We're actually going to cut off on the live thing here in about 8 seconds, but the podcast will pick up these last couple seconds here. Thanks again to Juan Hillman for coming on. We really appreciate his time. Hopefully maybe we can get another guy on next week to talk a little more draft. Next week we'll get back into our regular tribe talk about the Indians. They lost tonight. another tough loss. No run support for Corey Kluber. But tomorrow, Indians, 30 picks, 11 through 40. More new faces in the minor leagues. Until then, go Tribe.
Thank you.